Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And a reveille, reveille to all of you. Happy holidays. Hoping you're giving thanks. For us, because we're giving thanks to you. It's Morning Combat coming at you. It is Friday. Let me get the date right. November 27th, 2020. No, we're not recording this on a Friday, full disclosure. But that's when you're receiving it. Black Friday, indeed. So hopefully your punch defense was good out there at Kmart this morning. My name is Brian Campbell, the big beige one, one half of your MK duo. The other fella on the other side, you know him. He's the best. He's the best thing going today, guys, at CBS Sports, MMA, Beyond. He's got like a million YouTube followers. He lifts weights in his front yard. It is Luke Thomas. Luke, you haven't had Thanksgiving yet, but hope you had a good one, Luke.
Yes, this is from the future, and I don't know what happened on Thursday, but I can say it was probably great. Happy Thanksgiving to you, BC.
Hopefully no Colombians caught COVID. Happy holidays to everybody this week, and hopefully everybody out there is doing a few things. Number one, liking this special edition holiday treat video for you. Number two, subscribing to this podcast. We're like 69,000 strong, but we're trying to get up to 75, 100, get Luke's top off, get a lot of fun things going on if we can get up there. And number three, I hope you clicked yes, play. I hope you press play on the MK documentary this week, the studio return, the donkumentary. Shout out to the folks at Malka and Showtime for producing that. Luke, let's not go any further than that before we do what this show is all about, which is answering the questions from our viewers, from our listeners, all that. Your thoughts on this production hitting the streets, bro?
The documentary?
Yeah.
People seem to like it, dude. People seem to like it. You and I were a little bit bickericious towards the end of it, but all in good fun, and we were both hungover and tired, and that's okay. In general, I think it was a hit, dude, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very impressed by, Less Than Jake, our fine former MK cameraman, and apparently he was the chief editor on this for Malka, but they took Luke an inside look at how the MK sausage is made, some of the bubbling difficulties and tensions going on between you and I, between Jay Aron, the producer, the great producer, and and they mushroomed them. They brought them to the surface, Luke. But no worries if you're a viewer. Luke and I not getting divorced or fired yet. Eventually, but not yet.
Yes, we are definitely going to go down in flames, but not anytime soon.
Yeah, indeed. So, look, this is the purpose of this show, to give you a little bonus on this holiday weekend, not just MK all day, nearly every day, not just the fun extra interviews you got from Francis Ngannou to Errol Spence, Danny Garcia, a lot more to come next week. What we did, of course, was command you to head on over to Apple Podcasts, boost our rating there, and really just asking your questions. You ask it, we'll answer it on this Black Friday. Luke, white people are just as willing to wait in line at 3 a.m. and get into fisticuffs, pushing the door open at Best Buy to get that damn projector screen as any other minority. Why are we calling it Black Friday?
I don't know why we call it. Well, I don't think they ever called it Black Friday because that's who the racial component was, of people taking advantage of the deals. It probably had some other component. But I will say that there's been people try to shame you if you watch Black Friday fight videos. And it turns out that like millennials and Gen Z are much more likely of all demographic groups to be involved in those deals, right? Like if you actually, what's the demographic makeup of your typical Black Friday shopper? Hey man, spans the demos, white, black, male, female, rich, poor, somewhere in the middle, young, old, right? It's a nice little mix. I take no shame, BC, in watching two mothers fucking hammer each other over a toaster at Target at 7 in the morning. I love it.
You know what I do take shame with? And look, for some people, this is their holiday week. This is their Thanksgiving weekend goal. For me and my family, Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, you know what we do? We put up the Christmas tree. We put up the decorations. We play the music. My wife and kids would be, they'd be willing to start Christmas season in like July if I didn't step in and say, we must respect the best holiday ever, Thanksgiving first. But the second it's over, Luke, it's Christmas Village. It's the whole thing. I get that for some people, and maybe to them, it's a family thing too. Shopping, getting a great deal all day in lines, to them, that's holidays. To me, that's... you know what's worse than people that watch Black Friday fight videos? People that wait in line for Black Friday. Like, I'm not against getting a deal. I've gone out at 2 p.m. on a Black Friday and checked out Best Buy and said, hey, anything cool here for cheap? But I ain't sacrificing family time for a new Xbox. Come on, bro. No.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a lowlife for watching those videos. I certainly acknowledge. But am I really as bad as the person who camped out to get a PS5 in front of Circuit City? I don't think that I am.
But look, we all do our own weird stuff. So if that's how you get high, yes, then stay there. All right. The goal of this show, of course, and thank you for everything, your support. These are one of the times we get to give back to you, not just the documentary. This fun episode, answer your questions, maybe have a little holiday fun here, aside from the typical fight game cycle. So, Luke, why don't we kick it off? These are from the people. Now, we don't have names. You know, that gets me mad because I like to recognize our listeners, our viewers. You're more like, no, don't give them any reason to sue us. But let's start off right here from one of our viewers. Luke, I'll pitch it to you. Hey, Luke, do you have a top five favorite Red Hot Chili Pepper songs in your personal library?
I mean, five Red Hot Chili Pepper songs. I don't know if I can name five.
Well, tell me your fandom of them. Like, at least give us a snapshot of your fandom, of one of the better.
Okay, so number one, easy for me. No, here, okay, you know what? I'm being a hater. That's not quite true. My number one is easy, BC, and I feel like, before I give you my answer, you know, you're a Chili Peppers fan, right?
Yeah, more casual than hardcore, but definitely a fan, yes.
Okay, so I mean, I feel like their best song by a country mile is Under the Bridge,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
One where he talked about, Anthony Kiedis talked about heroin addiction and overcoming it and all that nonsense. So that is definitely my number one go-to. The cover of Stevie Wonder's Higher Ground, I'm kind of partial to a little bit. What else am I in favor of, BC? Let me see. I would say...
The end of the night. So I was a big Blood Sugar Sex Magik, which was their first real sort of mainstream commercial album where they got a little bit away from being more just, you know, funk and other things. But I love that big late 90s sort of, I don't know if you call it a comeback. Don't call it a comeback if somebody's been here for years. But the whole Californication, Don't Stop, Scar Tissue, that whole run of radio rock hits during a time, Luke, you will remember, when radio rock was the shit, right? It was like Nickelback and you know, all kinds of rap rock crossovers. They brought the good stuff during that run. They were rock and roll during that run.
Yeah, and that was such a huge time for... I mean, that was really the peak of rock and roll, if you ask me. Or at least its last peak, anyway. So I would say, okay, we've got... I like Californication, too. But you got Under the Bridge, Breaking the Girl, I would add. Higher Ground. And I'm going to throw in... Not that it's one of the better ones. I am not a Chili Peppers aficionado, BC, but I'll throw in Aeroplane. It's my aeroplane. That one. Let's stay there.
Do you also like Your Pleasure Spiked with Pain?
I certainly do, good sir. All right, give me your top five.
I don't think I have a top five. And the reason why I won't force one out is I want to respect the band and say I'm a casual, I'm a radio listener, I'm a YouTube listener, I'm not a album listener of them. You know who's probably real mad listening to this is CBS Sports combat editor Brandon Wise, our good friend, who's a hardcore. He's so hardcore, his wife once bought him what they thought was front row tickets to the Chili Peppers, Luke. Turns out it was a Chili Peppers cover band. So, you know, that was probably a fun night out.
That happened to me. I was dating a girl, and she thought she got me tickets to see The Roots, but she actually got me tickets to see
The Boots.
Who was the famous crooner, the woman who sang At Last? Her band is called The Roots Band. Like, that's the name, The Roots Band. So I ended up seeing her, and she was drunk as shit, singing and like trying to twerk at like age 70. It's not Eartha Kitt. Eartha Kitt was the black cat woman.
Edda, is it Edda James or something? I don't know.
Edda James. Yeah. Okay. And Edda James in her prime was like, couldn't be topped. But, you know, at nearly age 80, not the same show.
Yeah, she's in her girdle. Yeah, I don't need that. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Luke, so Brandon White's probably pissed off, but I'm going to say, like, remember when Vlad Klitschko in his prime would come out to Can't Stop? That song's badass, right?
See, I don't hate that song. But doesn't like TJ Dillashaw come out to it? It feels like a little bit like elevator music.
I'm a day one ish Killashaw fan, so I'm fine with that. I love, whatever. But I'm not going to pretend to be hardcore. I'm a Cash, so let's move on.
Jose, you don't like Under the Bridge was like.
It's their best song. It's fan friggin' tastic. It's like the odd ballad from this funky, fresh, fusion band. Yes, they're friggin' fantastic. Shout out to. What's the Rick Rubin, who is a huge influence in their career, by the way. Yeah. And by the way,
when Flea discovered Cannibal Corpse on social media this year, it was a wonderful, wonderful time.
Wow. By the way, loved Flea and Kiedis's cameo in Point Break with Swayze and Gary Busey.
Flea's had a bunch of cameos.
Yes, yes. And also that jump shot he hit, and I think it was the third MTV Rock and Jock basketball game. He hit a big corner jump shot to like win it in the closing seconds. I was there. I'm not there, but you get what I'm saying there. All right, enough babbling.
All right, BC, my turn. My turn to ask you. Ready? Here we go. Is Habib risking turning into an Icarus, which is to say, is coming back for the 30-0 record, and we're assuming that he does that at this point, just flying too close to the sun?
Okay, so there's a lot of stuff going on here, Luke. He says, remember in the show we were like, well, I'm not going to talk about him coming back for 30, until I hear it from you. Is that the Goo Goo Doll? No, that's...
I hear it from...
Jim Blossom? I don't know. Better Than Ezra? One of them. It's one of them, yeah. Luke.
Dishwalla.
Tell me all your thoughts on God. Yeah, because I'd really like to see him. Yeah. Tell me if
Okay.
So what about Luke, Habib? Habib came out and was like, no. I'll smash your opinion if you believe that. But then did you see he just put on social media this week, like, Dana White, I'll see you soon, boy. I don't know what's going on. I don't get the Icarus reference. He could walk away at perfection right now, yet 30-0 would be a nice round number. There are two things I think he could do or should do, Luke. And one of them is not Conor McGregor because he's not motivated by money. So why do it, right? If he's not motivated by the money from it, he doesn't want to reward this guy that he thinks is a POS. Either get GSP in some form, catch weight, just do it because your dad wanted you to. Or I said this before, I'll say it again. Specifically angle Tony Ferguson. He's got to beat Do Bronx first, and that's a great-ass fight. But say, look, this was the fight the fans always wanted. Five times was a charm. Nope. We're going to go for the sixth time. And if I'm going to walk away at 30, I'm going to Ted Williams it. I'm not going to, I might be hitting 400 today, but there's a doubleheader. I got to play both games. All right. I'm going to fight Tony Ferguson. I'll have huge respect for his daggy balls if he does that. Okay.
Yeah. Those daggy balls are certainly like hibbity hops. I'm not really all that concerned about it, BC. This is not St. Pierre, almost quite literally walked out of the octagon on his hands and knees after fighting Johnny Hendricks. And I thought Hendricks won that fight, whether you think he was on the sauce or not. You just asked me who I thought did the better work once the cage door was closed. I thought it was Johnny Hendricks, but obviously St. Pierre got his hand raised, but his face was a mess at the press conference. He was in a shitty mood hyping the fight, 'cause he was just burned out from the fight game. I mean, I get that Habib is probably feeling a lot of things about what he wants to do. And, a lot of those are probably not centered on fighting, but BC, he's not declining. You know what I mean? Like, he's not, like, his game isn't suffering or something. So, like, I don't know I don't know exactly what's next. Is he going to bite off more than he can chew? But as long as he's fighting another man who's 155 pounds, I mean, my guy's got a shot to win, BC.
Yeah. I mean, he does. He's going to be favored against every single one. I mean, look, seriously, we said this when he originally beat Gaethje and said he's going to leave. If he leaves now, he will legitimately be leaving at like the mountaintop, something that maybe only Jim Brown of the NFL did back in the day or whatever. Like, even when Barry Sanders walked away, he had stuff left in the tank, but he was never going to be the same Barry Sanders. The key of that transaction was that if he would have hung around for a year and a half, he could have broke the rushing record. And he's like, I don't care. I'm going to stand by my principles. I respect people with conviction and core values and all that. So it's on him, whatever the hell he wants to do. Look, he has nothing to prove to us. Nothing, nothing at all. Wouldn't it be great to be in that spot where you got nothing to prove to anyone, Luke? Right?
My whole life has been just constantly trying to prove that I'm not an absolute piece of dog crap.
Yeah. I mean, you
know, how am I doing?
Well, your family is a bunch of scholars and you're like, hey, I'm going to go into like MMA breakdowns. Yeah. By the way, what happened to Dissected? You got a new spinoff franchise. What's going on here?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if we can tell the whole story. Dissected is still going to be around.
Did you make a Pat Tillman joke on an episode of Dissected and you got it shut down by Showtime Legal? Is that what happened?
No, BC, I exercised more caution than that. I can't really talk about it, but I have to break them up. So you'll get a little bit of both, but there you go. Technical difficulties and Dissected.
And Brosected. I like the name, though. Well done. Technical difficulties. Thank you. All right, let's advance. Let's advance here, Luke. What do you got? What do you got? My turn?
It's you. It's Europe. Yep.
All right, Luke, out of the following 2020 COVID standouts, not on this list, though, a lot of people had great COVIDs, right? Michael Jordan's last stand. The damn Tiger guy.
Can you just ask the question?
So they put him in the can. Fauci. Fauci had a good year. But of these MMA fighters, Luke, who will have the best career of guys that had 2020 standouts? Your choices are Khamzat Chimaev, Jiří Prochazka, Yeah, John Blachowicz. Kevin Holland or D. Mournier Lazez.
Yeah.
It's either Chimaev,
although he's interesting.
The
real choices are Chimaev, Prochazka, and Holland.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. The obvious answer is supposed to be Chimaev, but honestly, man, like, I'm not saying everything is a fraud. For me to say the whole thing is a fraud and a setup, I have to know better, and I don't know better. But here's what I do know. He hasn't really proved a whole lot other than he's obviously good, but lots of people are good in the UFC. We don't really know how good he is. Now, we're going to find out when he faces Leon Edwards and he goes and he beats Leon Edwards. Okay, then at that point, you have definitive evidence. Beating Gerald Meerschaert in the way he did was impressive, and the other two donks. But those other two donks, I mean, they're not going to make it in the UFC much longer. Meerschaert, he's, I think, a competent, decent middleweight. I think he's got parts of his game that are actually quite good, but I didn't like the way he was approaching the fight. Chimaev has ability, but relative to the hype around him, he hasn't proven that. Prochazka is to me very interesting, and I think can make a run at 205. And Holland I like as well, but I think that there's a lot of hype behind him that he hasn't proven yet. So, which is to say, all three guys are very talented and will go far. I'm going to do the black horse option, BC. I'm going to go Prochazka. 205 is much more of a wide open. It's a much more of a wide open division than the other ones. Chimaev at 185 might be a somewhat wide open, but 170, not really. And Kevin Holland, I like, but I don't know.
Can you use the term upper bound limits in this conversation at all?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. The reason why this question is interesting is because you actually don't know the upper bound limit of any of them.
If I may.
And Prochazka, to me, has more known weaknesses, but he's competing, I think, at a space and time where it's more available to advance.
Let's just tell the truth here. I don't know who the guy D is. Does he fight for the UFC, Luke? Am I a filthy cash? Who the hell is
Mounir Lazez? Yeah, he does. I think he's Moroccan. He had that war in his debut. I'll pull it up here in just a minute. But who do you think?
Holland looks really good, but I don't know if he has that final gear, that spectacular gear to beat the elites. And Prochazka is wild and dangerous, Luke, but I don't know if he's as well-rounded and technical enough to be great. I think it's got to be Chimaev, correct?
Yeah. Chimaev, I think, is the other choice. By the way, Mounir Lazez had the back-and-forth war with Abdul Razak El Hassan in July at Fight Island.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. Here's what happens. And let's be honest, Luke, this isn't, this isn't nationalism or racism. Sometimes foreign people show up on the UFC screen, you watch them once, you're like, well, that guy's kind of interesting, but it takes 2 to 3 fights before the name and the face and the fighting all comes together in your brain, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Jan Blachowicz was that guy for like 7 years, you know?
Yeah, Johnny Blachowicz. Yeah, I know that guy. All right. Yeah, team me up, Luke, here. Let's go.
All right, here we go. Which happens first, BC? You got three choices. Which happens first? A, UFC abandons the pay-per-view model, which I mean either means they go fully TV or something like WWE. B, the judging system is revamped. Or C, we see a fighter win a belt in three separate weight classes. What do you think?
Wow. Okay. I'm tempted to say three. Let me try to talk myself out of saying three. It's not going to be B, Luke, because I think that just given the fact that each state has their own rules, which is so freaking stupid. MMA is like a professional sport right now. We have major league promoters, mid-level, small-level ones, and yet every state's like, no, in this state, you got to put your, if you have one knee and your package on the ground, you can keep, you can knee to the face. But in the other state, only one, like it's just, it's BS, okay? They're not figuring that out. The first one could happen, but I think given that UFC's still locked into the deal that they're in right now, and it's profitable and I feel like they still thrive and need the traditional pay-per-view market. Now, WWE did go all into the streaming in 2014, right? They risked future money, and they said it's going to be one price, no matter if it's WrestleMania or it's a, you know, Payback or Backlash or like a, the equivalent of like the last UFC pay-per-view we just saw, Luke, right? It's just like a complete mail-in, most, you know, it's all the same price. And look, it's worked to a degree, but you could argue if they'd gone the other way, or if they split that up. So I don't think we're going to get there yet. It's got to be C. So the answer, Luke, is, or the question off of the answer is, who will it be? Now, it could be Henry Cejudo if they give him a chance. And somebody like Volkanovski is the champ, who is smaller, and Cejudo goes out there and fights a great fight. It always could be somebody like Conor McGregor if he goes in there against the right welterweight and knocks him out. Even though we've proved, I think he's proven to this point, Luke, and three welterweight fights, one against Cerrone, that doesn't count, but two against a legitimate. Now, is Nate Diaz a legitimate welterweight, or is he a blown-up lightweight?
He's a blown-up lightweight.
Okay, but he didn't have knockout power in that. He had beat-your-ass power. He had cut-you-and-knock-you-down power. He didn't have knockout power. But still, he could potentially stop somebody. He's in this equation, but it's probably more likely to be an Israel Adesanya if he can go up there and in one fight win the 205 title and then say, look, I'm going to do it. I'm going to F around. I used to kickbox it heavy, so I'm going to go up. And let's say John Jones is the champion. Let's say they have this epic fight. And is he? It's possible. It's in play, Luke. Is there anyone else we're not thinking of? I don't think Valentina can get down to 115. Is there anybody else we are not thinking of?
Could Figueiredo win at one? I mean, he hasn't won the bantamweight belt, but he obviously could make bantamweight and be competitive there.
Yeah, but Feather.
Could he even fight at 145? Could he do it? I don't think he could
so
do it.
Little. He's so small. Yeah, I don't.
So yeah, your two clubhouse leaders, if he came back, would be Cejudo, Connor, if he gets a welterweight title shot somehow, depending on the matchup, and then Adesanya. Those are your best choices, I feel like.
If Khamzat Chimaev lives up to his top end billing, I guess he can win one in every weight class, right? Okay, there you go.
I suppose that would be one. All right, hit me with the next one.
All right. This is Luke. It says, if Luke had... Wait, is this to me or you? I don't understand how the people write. Right. Is this me reading it to you? I guess so, right? Number five on our list here?
Yeah, that's you have to read that. I just read the last one.
Okay, Luke. If Luke, meaning you, had been in A Few Good Men, the movie, would you have given PFC William Santiago the code red if ordered to do so?
Okay, so Private First Class William Santiago, would I have given the code red? Probably. Have you seen this movie?
Like parts of it on HBO as a kid. I don't remember the storyline. I remember the big moments, of course. Look, you can't handle the fact that I can't remember it, okay?
Dude, here's how warped the Marines are. The Marines are made in this movie by the people who made it to look like bullies who are just like ravenous about power and physical domination over each other.
Who are the Marines I know? You. Seems right. Seems about right. Okay.
And I was like, dude, if you talk to Marines about A Few Good Men, they're like, God, I love the Marines and how they're portrayed in this movie. It's like, you know, they're being portrayed as bad guys, right? And they're like, yeah, but in the best way possible. So that's just something you have to understand. Listen, in my time in the Marine Corps, I saw an absolute fuck ton of hazing. But one of the reasons why this movie is terribly unrealistic is if you're a colonel in charge of Guantanamo Bay, you're not giving orders about individual low-level enlisted guys and who gets, you know, hit with the bar of soap in the sock or whatever. You don't make that call. They're way too busy. They barely even know. I mean, they couldn't name a one private in a fire squad if their, you know, their lives depended on it. That's going to come from somebody at the sergeant level, at the corps, at the NCO level, or the staff NCO level. So that movie gets that really wrong. And have I seen hazing like that? Maybe not to that extent where they fucking kill a guy, no. But have I seen hazing in the Marine Corps that came from some kind of order above, you know, from some kind of corporal or sergeant or staff sergeant? All the fucking time. All the fucking time. It was routine. You know, you see just all kinds of crazy shit in the field. Anyway, but the second part of the question is, do you think Colonel Nathan Jessup, that was Jack Nicholson,
I didn't get there yet. I needed your answer. Well, you said yes, William.
So would I have done it? I mean, I didn't. People are not going to believe me. I actually witnessed a shitload. I don't think I ever really took part in any hazing, but like, if I had been ordered to do so, probably.
Like, did you ever see the show Oz? If they ordered you to do some of that kind of stuff, would you have done it?
Yeah, but isn't like, dude, like rules in prison are different, man. Like, if someone's like, you got to stab a guy, or we're just going to stab you to death in the shower. What are you going
to
do?
I need you to rape this man. You stab a dude. Look, yeah. All right. Okay. The second part. Do you think Colonel Nathan Jessup was correct in his "You can't handle the truth" speech? That must be Jack Nicholson. Was he correct in saying that?
I don't know anymore. I used to think that there was some truth to it, but I grew up in the military when, you know, gays could not openly serve and women couldn't be in combat billets, and all that has changed. And, you know, it's like that scene with Bill Murray in Ghostbusters BC, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. You always thought if those rules were broken, there would be mass hysteria, and there just wasn't. In other words, there was sort of like these ugliness to the way in which the military combat arms conducted themselves that you thought was sort of like the secret ingredient in the sauce. If you had asked me 20 years ago, I absolutely would have told you yes. Now I'm not so sure.
Okay. In light of what you just said, do you think it's time that we remove the gender barriers on public restrooms?
Well, they mostly have in the city here where I live. They just have. Well, here is the way to do this, which no one ever talks about is possible. The best way to do it is you have, like, if you can make it, you have a series of individual rooms that anybody can just use.
Yes.
Rather than like grouping everyone 50 to a room. And then people all get weird about who's doing what and who's not doing what. Rather, just make it like, here, you got one stall, one person at a time, and everything else is, you know, it's wide open, right? Do it that way and fucking be done with it. I mean, I tend to think it's not a big deal.
Would you feel comfortable, like, post-Chipotle, 1 a.m., just tearing, at, like, peeling paint off the walls, Luke, if there was, like, some respectable females in there? No, you wouldn't, Luke. You wouldn't.
BC. Today, I forgot to take a dump before doing deadlifts at the gym, and I consistently farted every time I tried to get into the position before the pull. That's a true story. I kept farting, and you know what? I'm 41. I'm like, I don't even care anymore.
Yeah, you don't. You obviously don't. All right, please continue, Luke.
All right, BC, thoughts on Dana White heavily encouraging finishes, and if this is fair, because there have been recent cases where it has almost definitely affected fighters' performances. What do you think?
Like, in theory, no, it's not fair. Because in what I say by encourage, I mean, they encourage to the level that you're financially motivated to get finishes. You get bonuses. You get more opportunities if you're exciting. Now, look, you can argue and say, even without that, like, let's say boxing, where that's not there. Well, if you're a finisher, you still in some ways get advantages promotionally. Why? Because people want to see finishes. But Dana White is obviously extreme in a purposeful way in that regard. So in some cases, it's not fair, because the goal in MMA is to win the fight, to win the championship, and it's any way possible, even if you are a John Fitch or a point fighter or whatever, Luke. But we've said this before when this subject was brought up. I mean, it's Dana White's sandbox. You know the rules coming in. Like, Leon Edwards might have to win 12 in a row before he gets a title shot. He knows that. We know that. That's what it is. That's where it's at right now, okay? Two turntables, a microphone, and the bald guy who makes the rules. So is it unfair? A little, but it's not, like, to the level where you are completely handcuffed and your career cannot advance and you whatever. I mean, look, it's there's two games in the fight game, because it's entertainment at the end of the day, right? It's not like high school sports. So there's the game where you try to win, and there's the game where you can get more money by being popular. That, you know, there's critical and there's commercial. The two values in this game. The commercial's up to you. If you fight and you get finishes, you're more likely to get commercialized. So it's part of the game anyway. Dana White just exploits it to a certain level to try to create a tone, and it works. Look, it's working. It's been working for a while. Okay.
You know, sort of. I mean, I'm not one of these guys that is on board with this idea that, like, oh man, they're firing everybody and then they're substituting them with Contender Series guys. And we all know the story about Contender Series. Like, you can win 30 seconds with a knockout and they'll sign you. And reality is, that's not really a great way to know who's going to be good and who's not. But, like, you got to understand Dana White's position here. The roster is swollen. They do need to make some cuts. That's the first thing I'd say. Second part is, there's no regional MMA, or at least very, very little. They're going to be overly reliant on that show and The Ultimate Fighter as a way to recruit new fighters. Now, that's not this conversation is not totally about Contender Series. It's also about, just in general, you know, how they get performance bonuses and who seems to get the rub and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, listen, if you're – so this is what I mean. Like, if you're a promoter, what is it you think the promoter wants? Like, and what is it you think the promoter is going to do? Like, is Dana White breaking any laws by structuring the business the way that he has? Now, you can maybe make a case that down the line, if this court case proceeds, that we'll discover that they have. But to this point, as I speak to you now, has it been determined by any regulatory body or any court of law or any other entity that could sort of adjudicate these matters that they've broken any law? No, nothing. They've broken no laws. So this is just going to be the way that it is to a degree. I don't know how healthy it is for the sport to fetishize it quite the way that he has, but I also don't think it's the sky is falling either, to be quite honest with you. We just had a pay-per-view where Brian and I debated, you know, whether or not the co-main event was kind of fucking boring. And that's like the best person in that weight class. So in the end, there'll be a series of incentives that guide behavior. The promoter, you know, unless he changes the rules, the promoter figuring out a way to incentivize finishes, I don't think is necessarily all that big a deal.
So do you think this debate is akin to, let's say, if you own a business and you're hiring somebody to work the door, a secretary, a cashier in the front, whatever, and you may have somebody who's fantastic at their job, but they look kind of gross and they stink and they're rude to people, and you want somebody that better represents your brand, so you hire the good-looking younger person who's nicer to the people and makes them feel like they want to come back.
Dude, this is the way the world works. You know who likes pretty women, BC? Everybody. Everybody does. Why do you think that they are in charge of the door at the most expensive and, you know, exclusive New York City clubs? These are not clubs I care to get into. I don't give a shit. But if you've ever been and tried to get into a really nice club in Manhattan, you've got a gorilla of a guy who's working security, and the That's person you. Who is inspecting everybody else is a woman, and she's absolutely fucking ruthless, and she's probably an 8 or a 9 out of 10 on everybody's scale. This is just the way that it goes. Yeah. Is it fair? Fuck no. Is it right? Of course not. It is just the way the world works. You want to make things easier on yourself, hire attractive people to make those goals get to where you want it to go. And yeah, it's, you know, it fucking blows, but, you know, pretty people get special treatment, BC. Yeah, you think that's true?
In the UFC, the pretty people are the people that bang and get knockouts, Luke. It is what it is, okay?
Up to a point, though. Even then, that's not totally true, which is why the argument is a little bit overstated. If you can win and, you know, on occasion have a nice... look, Valentina Shevchenko has had almost twice as many decisions as she's had finishes, and they revere her and promote her like she's the fucking Terminator. It's just not true. You have to always go out and do that. Now, do you have to have the occasional Jessica I or Juliana Pena moment in your career? Yeah, you probably should. You can't just have nothing but John Fitch moments. But if you can balance it out even a little bit and you can win, dude, you can go pretty far with it. It just helps if you're attractive or you have an attractive fight style or, you know, some other thing that you can hang your hat on.
Luke, if you had been in a coma for the past 10 years but still held the same level of UFC and MMA fandom that you do, and you reemerged just in time for Saturday's pay-per-view last week, and I told you, hey, look, there's Jennifer Maia in the main event. You're like, who's that? And I told you, she's either Damian Maia's daughter or wife. Which would you have believed more?
Wife.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
All right, BC, I'm not sure we have to, I have to explain this one.
I think I have to read it to you, Luke. I think that's how the rules work, okay?
Oh, yes, so, sorry, go ahead.
So, Luke, this viewer is saying, thank you for the rights in perpetuity answer about why is music dubbed 14 to 21 days post-event. Can you just give me a refresher on what that means, Luke?
If you watch a pay-per-view live and you hear everyone's walkout music, like Caitlin Chukagan comes out to DMX, Where the Hood At, if you wait a year or two or something and then you go on Fight Pass and you listen for her walkout, the chances are you won't. You'll hear some other kind of music that is sort of like, you know, whatever UFC owns, like their own in-house music dubbed over it. WWE, and the reason why is because you can buy the rights for a certain amount of time, but they tend to not buy them in perpetuity.
Yeah, and if you want to know the rest, hey, buy the rights. How bizarre, right, Luke? You know what I'm saying? So, Luke, why is UFC 217, 226, 229 subject to this rule, but not 227 and 249? And if everybody knows rights in perpetuity, then why don't fighters walk out to something that does not fall subject to RIP? That's an interesting question, I guess.
Okay, so I don't know the answer to why 227 and 249 is the way that this person describes it. I honestly don't know. But the question, to answer the question about like why don't they do it to something that's not that way, well, for one, they don't really have control over it. It's the UFC as a broadcast entity that has to purchase these rights. So you'd have to find a way to work that through UFC. Now, you could say, well, what about just using your own music? Rampage had his own rap song for a time or something like that. Maybe that's a way to work around it, BC. But you know as well as I do, when fighters come out to songs that they had a rapper or, you know, rocker friend write for them, those songs tend to suck balls.
Luke, what song in the UFC is most identified by one fighter? It doesn't have to be your favorite song, the best song. What song is like where you hear the song, you think of that fighter instantly?
There's probably a couple. One, Biggie, Kick in the Door.
Who comes out to that? Who are you talking about here?
Frankie Edgar.
Yes.
That one.
Yep.
Your Rain on the Top was Short Like Leprechauns, that one. So that's one. I would say back that in the Pride days, the Rude Sandstorm one was big. Matt Hughes' Country Boy Can't Survive is big.
Yes. When I hear that, what's that Chael Sonnen song? It comes out for the
country. Some honky tonk song. The dingity dangity. Worst fucking entrance music.
I love
ever.
That shit. The beginning, it's like it's so what just catches you off guard that you're like, what? Yeah, what is that song,
dude?
What
that shit, like, you know, Chael. It's dude. It's amazing that Chael would come out to that music because he understood the business of promotion early in that era in ways that, and Steven to this day, contemporaries never did. How did you not have an iconic walkout song? How did you come out to some song about a honky tonk in Tennessee?
It's awful. Too Much Fun by Daryl Singletary. Yeah. Too Much Fun. What's that shit? Yeah.
Who the fuck sings that as like, you know, an anthem? And you can't even say, oh, it's because you don't like country. Country Boy Can't Survive. Hank Williams Jr. I mean, you know, it's exactly what we're talking about. You can do it if the shit works. Yeah. But if it doesn't, you know, you fuck off. Ronda Rousey's, bad reputation was pretty big.
Very iconic and identified with just her. I'm not good at this. I'm trying to think of famous fighters, and I'm like, I have no idea what their song is. What was Chuck Liddell's?
When Lesnar came out to Enter Sandman, that was kind of big.
Yeah. What was Liddell's? Do we know?
He had a DMX song, and so did Anderson.
Yeah,
Provo.
No, yeah, Liddell with the yes, that was which song was it? It was Come Through, Run Through, that one, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Where My Dog's
Have you ever listened? Have you ever listened to like Where the Hood At? The lyrics are insanely homophobic.
Well, yeah, I mean that's most of yeah, that's most. All right, yeah, that's great. Luke, let's roll on here. You got the next
All
one?
Right. All right, BC. Have you guys ever watched the Comedy Store doc, like the documentary on Showtime? Also, have you guys ever been there? BC, what do you think?
No and no, but I do enjoy Showtime docs outside of trying to pump it because they're the label that pays me, and I will check it out. Right now, I'm into that doc series, Luke, real quick. Rick Rubin, you know, the famous music producer, I referenced him earlier. He has the Shangri-La documentary series on Showtime, which just basically has like bands coming into his famous studio and he works with them. It's just very interesting. Have not seen the Comedy Store. How about yourself?
I have not seen this one, but I have seen, it came out, I want to say 2002-ish. So there was a documentary called Comedian, and it followed two comedians. It followed the return of Jerry Seinfeld after the end of his show back to stand up. And he, you know, sort of working through the scene again and, she's trying to, you know, shake off the rust. He had a little bit there. And then this other comedian who'd sort of been in the trenches and was trying to make it, named Orny Adams. And that there was a lot of scenes there that took place at what's called the Comedy Cellar in New York City. The Comedy Cellar is probably what the comedian, it's not the one that does the biggest shows in New York, BC, but it's like all the comedians know that that's the place that you go to really get, at least it was back in the aughts, as like the place that the best comedians in the city would go to night after night. So I went there so often that you would see like very, very, very famous comedians pop in, and they would bump everyone else in line that night and just do a set. So I saw Dave Chappelle come in one time and do an hour-long set that was unrehearsed, unscheduled. Wow. I saw Seinfeld come in. So I saw Seinfeld from me to this camera. He came in. Chris Rock came in and did a set. I saw Patrice O'Neal there. Nearly fist fight a heckler there. I mean, I have Dave Attell, all those guys I saw come in and do just phenomenal. Jim Norton was all the time there. Nick DiPaolo. You know, that was just an unbelievable place. So I have a lot of great memories of that. It's probably pretty similar to because the Comedy Store is the LA version, basically, of the Comedy Cellar on the East Coast.
So the Comedy Store is the one with Mitzi?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that Pauly Shore's mom? I think
I don't know. It might be. But you know, it's a sort of an iconic West Coast club, like CBGB's or something. But
you think Brendan has played the store?
Dude, he's played there a million times, I think.
I'm sure he slayed, bro. I'm sure he slayed afterwards backstage too. Shout out to Brendan Schaub. All right. Luke, have you ever seen the Ratcatcher documentary on Netflix?
No, what is that?
The Foxcatcher. Sorry, Foxcatcher one.
Oh.
What was that dirtbag's name? The rich guy. What was his name?
John DuPont.
Do you ever worry that while we laugh and have fun with this, that Jay is very DuPontian and that we're going to have a Schultz brother type exit from the show, Luke?
Well, John DuPont was at least successful for having money. Aaron is not.
He drives a pretty nice car. All right, I'll give him.
All right, here's the thing, though. He took a fucking beating in that documentary.
I hope he's okay with that.
I think people loved it.
That's why I'm wondering if we should move off the farm right now. Luke, okay, Kurt Angle, by the way, so. Kurt Angle was smart. He got the hell off of that farm. All right, yeah. All right. Hey, Luke. Right, here's a question from the viewers. When's the politics coming back? Watching these fools have breakdowns in the live chat is a priceless experience. So what they're asking you, Luke, is why are you not interjecting more politics into these shows just to troll the audience?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, what always is so funny about the live chat is whenever I talk about politics, which is, you know, relative to the amount of talking that happens per episode, it's not my call. I put up the thread ahead of time. I mean, I could always ignore the questions. That part is true. But if I'm being faithful to the questions as they're laid out before me and how the audience selected them, because remember, I set it up where, you know, it's ranked essentially. So if you like it, it shoots to the top, you know, if you get enough of them. It's like y'all wrote the questions and y'all selected which ones you thought deserved to be answered more than the other ones. So whenever I hear like complaints about it, I'm always like, okay, then vote it, then downvote it. You know, what do you want me to do? That's the first part I'd say. The second part is, listen, I don't ever expect people when I'm done making any kind of political point in the live chat to necessarily agree with me. But I do think that inside of MMA, there is a obscene amount of groupthink and not nearly enough diversity of thought. Whether that's true about MMA itself, like, you know, how to fix judging. You know, I put out this video being like, there should be two judges, one or two referees, one inside the cage and one outside. And here's how the one outside should be empowered. I had everyone and their brother telling me that was the stupidest idea. The next week, I got phone calls from two different commissioners at major commissions telling me they love the idea. You know what I mean? And then now you see Nevada. I don't know if they barred it for me. I suspect that they didn't. But that this, you know, breathing new life into things and taking taking chances with ideas. Yeah, sometimes you're going to say probably stupid things. But more often than not, you might at least be on to something, or you might have an outright great idea. But, you know, diversifying the kind of thought that takes place in MMA, I think, is extremely important, because everyone kind of either wants to agree with each other or not take too many steps outside of an acceptable Overton window. As it relates to politics, I think that's especially true. Everyone inside the sport is either sort of tuned out to the kind of thing or is decidedly right-wing. And I'm not here to say that any of those positions are right and that I've got it all figured out. Far from it. But you're probably going to be better off in the end, and this includes me as well, hearing from people who I don't agree with, hearing viewpoints that force you to check the premises of your own, that may challenge your own, or that you hear and you just decide you know it's wrong because it's something you really looked into. Fine. But diversity of thought, I'm always told that the right hates academia because there's not enough diversity of thought. Well, here I am reversing the process and trying to do the same thing on the other side. And there are, by the way, to be clear, there's a lot of people who are very receptive to it, even when they write me and tell me they don't agree. Okay, fine. You don't have to agree. But I think if you're open to the idea that diversity of thought matters, whether it's right or it's wrong, you know, having a conniption fit about it tells me that what you're really not interested in is diversity at all. You're just interested in having your worldview repeated back to you in very comforting ways. And that's intellectually lazy and a little bit pathetic.
Oh, all right. That was pretty deep. So are you willing to understand then at least that George Bush's brother was on the board of directors for the WTC security staff, or no? I mean,
didn't we look into this and it was like, only like 10% true of all the claims you made that night.
So you're saying there's a chance, Luke. All right. What else we got here, Luke?
Let's all right. Last but not least, BC. This one goes to you, good sir. If you could bring, or they, I don't know if our producer wrote this like a 3-year-old, but I'll have to translate it from this gobbledygook pigeon English. If you could, BC, do you ever see how like reflexively shitty I am to people? Like it does not take much effort. Yeah. It does not take much effort. Okay, back to it. If you could bring to dinner any three combat sports figures, dead or alive, who would they be? They could be coaches, fighters, famous cornermen, just notable figures inside the
strategy
sport.
Let's really do this question the right way. Are we thinking it in terms of chemistry too? Because if I've got Ali and McGregor at the same table, that could really, you know, that could really speed up the enjoyment.
Nah, that's just
process.
Fireworks for nothing. Is that what you want to waste it on?
Meanwhile, Luke's like, I already got it. I had it already. It's Behrman. It's Volkanovski and Kai Kata France. All right. It's fantastic. All right. Yeah. All right. What do you think? You can have the first draft pick off the board. Who you take? Who you having dinner with?
I mean, okay, let's posit something. Are we assuming that they're going to be truthful, or are we just taking them as they am?
Fighters are truthful. I've had situations in larger, you know, media dinners where you get food and a couple of drinks and there's a famous fighter sitting across. They're truthful, Luke, okay? Especially when they're retired. They don't give a damn.
So if they're going to be into the process of having a conversation, I mean, you got to go Dana White, right? Don't you?
Oh, he would. Don't you? But he would commandeer and own the conversation because he's a professional spinster, right? He controls the narrative, Luke.
Yeah, but just cut his mic like the second debate or like the Oscars when you go on too long, like the microphone just sinks.
He is entertaining, though. When I worked at ESPN as an MMA editor, he came in a couple of times, and we got to sit down with him for an hour, not in an interview, just in like a let's talk how we could better, you know, promote the sport. And he holds court. He's an interview. He's an interesting dude to I'm sure if we raise drinks to him, Luke, you may end up changing your opinion. You may go red at the end. Luke.
I'm the one inviting him.
You may, you know, yeah, you would. Okay. Okay. Yeah. You and Rhonda.
Well, Dana would be one, right?
Okay. Yeah. Look, that's a good call. Dana's there. That's a great call. I mean, should we shoot for the stars? I mean, is there going to be a better person there than Mike Tyson to entertain you? Is there going to be a better person there, Luke?
No, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And then, man,
don't say Pearl Gonzalez.
No, I was thinking more Cus D'Amato, but okay. I mean, that's another way you could go. Probably the same size.
Wow, Luke. Wow. Nobody watches this deep into the show. No. I mean, Michael Bisping would be great, right?
Yeah, he would be. I mean, only three is like, you got to have kind of a Last Supper deal where you just have a bunch of them.
You want to hear, okay, here's what you want out of this, okay? You want to hear great stories, right? You want to hear stuff you've never heard before. You want to
Mia St. John.
You want to do that. You want to be entertained.
Asa Akira. Yeah.
let's just bring Rocco, okay? Let's just end it, all right? Can we just watch him eat? No. Yeah, I mean, look, can we go wrong here, Luke? I mean, Mike Tyson, Dana White, and Conor McGregor. That'd be a fun sit. Actually, Lorenzo would be a guy that I would like to, over an extended period, right, eating some pasta, maybe at the Red Rock Canyon Casino that he owns, and just hearing the story. Yeah, that'd be pretty interesting, right? And like,
I had a friendly conversation with him at the were you at the presser when UFC announced that, you know, the whole NY legalization thing? No. And they had Governor Cuomo there signing it in the whole nine yards. You remember that?
I remember it. I was not there, though. No.
So I was there, and I had a conversation with Lorenzo in person after the fact. And
did you talk about
him to
Did you talk gains and striations, Luke?
Well, here's the thing. He is built like a brick shithouse, but he is very short. He's shorter than Joe Rogan. He's short. He must be like 5'7" or something, 5'8", something like that. He's not tall.
Why would you bring up Joe Tye? I don't get that, but go ahead. Keep going.
I'm just, I put out a picture of me next to me recently. Everyone was like, you're fucking short.
Not tall.
So Lorenzo's a good call. I might sub out Dana for Lorenzo. Keep Mike Tyson. Would you bring Don King? I mean, I don't know.
No, he's a dirtbag. The only problem with picking obvious ones like Dana, Connor, whatever, is like they're so overexposed as well, right? It would almost be cool to have somebody, you know. I mean, I don't know how far you want to go down the list, but you know, would it suck to have Joe Louis or Jack Johnson or somebody like that? You know, I mean, it would be
Jack Johnson, yeah, exactly. You know what? Jeff Blatnick might be a great one as well. Rest in peace to Jeff Blatnick.
Joe San, maybe, yeah. Just
hey, remember when you killed a guy in prison and went to prison for rape, fucking animal?
God, yeah. Wow. Ninja chop. Judo chop. Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Mostly, I don't like talking to anybody, so it's a hard question for me to answer, BC.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'd have Shab, Hoppa, and Rhonda. How about that? That wouldn't be awkward at all.
Hoppa. All right. Okay. I think we're done, right?
That's it. We're done, Luke. Okay. This was fun. It was a holiday treat. Okay. I've got important life things to do. Okay.
So do I. Well, BC, let's just remind everybody, like the video, hit that subscribe button. And you know what? On this Thanksgiving Friday, share this around or share the documentary around. Isn't that fair? I think that's pretty fair, right?
That's fair. And pass the stuffing, the Scottie Pippen of the Thanksgiving meal. Well, you had stuffing. Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, we're still trying to figure out what to cook, but by the time you watch this, yes,
you'll have cooked it already. Yeah.
Right. Hey, BC, happy Thanksgiving to your family and to our MK family here who makes all this possible.
Thank you. And Web Scream too.
And Web Scream too. All right, you want to take us out?
Seriously, we you know, let's have fun, but we're giving thanks. I love all of you people, okay? We can't do weird docs without you actually enjoying it. And thank you for your patronage. Thank you for buying the merch. And oh, by the way, there's still time for Black Friday sale of the merch, okay? So go on to store.show.com. I know Luke doesn't check his email, but there's actually a Black Friday deal, Luke.
They told us after the show on Monday there actually is a Black Friday deal. So check our Twitter feeds today. You'll see it.
And thank you to everybody. And that's it, Luke. I'm Brian Campbell. That's Luke Thomas. We are Morning Combat. So I've got two words for you. We out.